is On The Ledge podcast, and I am your host, Jane Perrone. I like to think of myself as the Sarah Koenig of houseplants, leaving no stone unturned in pursuit of information about why your cactus died. A few weeks back, I travelled to South London and the home of Rob Stakovitz, who lives in a Victorian terraced home stuffed to the gunwales with gorgeous houseplants. He gives me a tour and explains why companion planting really works for houseplants. I've also been thinking and planning for the sew-along, and I've decided to break up some of the information into bite-sized advice and drop it into a series of episodes to help you get your ducks in a row ready for sowing over the next few weeks. So in next week's episode, I'm going to be looking at where to buy your seed. I've got lots of suggestions, but if you do have any good sources, then do let me know in the coming week so I can add that in. Thanks to Rebecca and Cody for becoming Ledge Ends this week, and to Beth and Jennifer who've become crazy plant people. They're all helping me reach my target of 100 patrons in time for my 100th episode. That's just 7 more to go. And once I've reached that target, hopefully well before my 100th show, all of my patrons will be getting an exclusive digital artwork. If you want more details of how to become a patron, just visit janeperrone.com where you'll find my show notes. But enough housekeeping, it's time to get on with the show. You will recognise Rob Stakovitz's voice because he did have a little cameo in the James Wong episode. And then we heard from him again in my live show from the RHS Urban Garden Show with Alice Fowler. Rob is a garden designer and a master of horticulture, so this guy really knows his stuff. I was so intrigued by some of the stuff that Rob had to say that I knew I had to visit him at home and see some of his plants in the flesh. After a very blustery walk from the tube station, I ended up at Rob's gorgeous house, keen to have a look around, and he was kind enough to show me all of his beautiful plants. The interview splits into two parts. There's a tour to start with, then we'll break for our question of the week and come back for our visionary talk about the future of houseplants in part two. As always, please do click on to janeperrone.com while you're listening to check out the show notes, where you'll see lots of lovely photos of Rob's interior and his plants, and also names for all the plants that we mention in the show. And, as usual, the interview starts with me getting a little bit overexcited. Oh, this is so cool. The first thing that's drawing my eye is your lovely Tillandsia display.
Yeah.
So I'm terrible with Tillandsias.
That's a Corylus contorta that died in the client's garden. So I thought that will make a perfect sort of display for my air plants. But then, of course, I didn't get round to doing that for ages. So I just had this branch knocking around for ages. but then it sort of sits quite happily there, sort of using the roots as a support.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. That's a really
just while you're down there, if I turn it round, this is Tillandsia caerulea, I think, which is scented. If you can get in there.
Oh, yeah.
This one.
Oh, hang on.
Sorry.
It's all right. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's
just,
nice.
It's like quite sweetly scented.
Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah. But so small that you sort of can't quite get to it.
Yes. Yeah. Sort of... a danger of poking your eye out.
Yeah.
But that's the one, things that you can just kind of, those hidden delights are oftentimes the things that delight me when I'm looking at plants.
Yeah. Oh. So my shelves, rather than having rows of pots, I thought I'd just put some window boxes up on the wall and then just have loads of plants stuffed into them.
This is a lovely stone.
This is well, I'm not sure if it's stone
or
actually, or it might be asbestos. They used to make pots.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
But these are like the perfect size because they're really deep and quite long as well. And if you look at the big windows, the Victorian windows here, that I think they used to make them to fit just along. So the larger size window. But Yeah, so done a smaller trough up here with some trailing tillandsias and not tillandsias, tradescantias.
Uh-huh.
It rhymes.
Which is a bonus.
So yeah, a few different plants in there.
Yeah.
There's that's a Vriesia, little bromeliads with sort of silvery leaves. Poelia glaucophylla, I think that is.
Uh-huh.
Cordyline terminalis, mm-hmm. quite like those dark-leaved ones. And another Vriesia, that's Vriesia fosteriana rubra.
Oh, nice.
There's one on the other side as well.
Yeah.
Sort of mirrored it, tied the two together.
And what's the fern on the end there?
Good question.
ferns are very hard, aren't they?
Yeah,
ferns
are
hard to identify unless it's something obvious.
There's unless it's obvious. But the thing is, because lots of ferns will grow quickly from spore, the suppliers just grow sort of just a random mix of ferns, mm-hmm. and then put them into a tray of mixed ferns that come in from Holland, and you don't know what could be in there.
I guess that's good though, because you might find something really rare and unusual in the mix.
Yeah.
You never know.
You do find sort of quite odd things that you would never expect, it's always good. Even the smallest garden centre or nursery, you'll always find something sort of a bit unusual.
That's true. That's happened to me a few times recently, where I found something that is... I found a Pilea microphylla, the artillery plant,
mm-hmm.
Stuffed in a tray of other plants. And I've had several people... I've actually managed to kill that now, because I did an experiment putting it in a trough with some other things, which I wasn't very happy with.
I
did manage to kill that, unfortunately. I now need to get some cuttings back off the person I gave cuttings to.
Mm.
But that is a good thing to be able to do. And I guess that's where your eye comes in for spotting unusual things.
Yes, yeah. And the other thing is, I don't... one thing that I've been sort of moving away from is just going for the rare and unusual plants. I'm sort of coming back round again to sort of basics and going back to plants that are just very easy to grow and difficult to kill,
mm-hmm.
and just trying to use them in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So in this part of just here by the big windows, I've painted the walls this sort of teal colour.
It's a really nice colour.
I just wanted it. I think it sets the plants up quite nicely, but I just want to try and play with the background colour, and then just put some common plants in front of it. I planted a load of the Nephrolepis ferns just in under this Kentia palm,
mm-hmm.
And then poked in sort of. Nephrolepis is so common, but then I planted these Vriesias and this is Neorigelia as well.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see this one at the front? It's one with really black leaves.
Oh, yes.
It's quite amazing that the plant can develop such a dark colour leaf, but I just wanted it sort of... greens and the black stripes of the Vriesia splendens and hieroglyphica.
And this goes back to what you were talking about when we were at James Wong's, in that you've got a big pot with lots of things planted in it, and they're all benefiting from the microclimate and presumably don't need a lot of watering because you've got a good volume of plants in there, so it's quite low maintenance, making it quite low maintenance. And then is this a Howea?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So you've got that doing its thing.
Yeah, looking... so that's the canopy layer, and then the sort of forest floor layer in this one large part is full of ferns and these bromeliads as well, which I think sort of is quite pleasing.
And of course, this Harrier is right at home in a Victorian home, because this is how it would have been.
It's like the traditional...
Yeah, this is where it should be, exactly. Is that a grow light in this large?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
so you've got a grow light.
Just a lamp that, you know, it's nice to have lighting on the palm anyway, but that also just gives a bit more light to the bromeliads below. And there's another pot full of this Calathea musaica.
This is such a popular plant now, isn't it? And I have heard from North One Garden Centre, Paul Holt.
Yeah.
He told me that this is one of the easiest of the family to look after. And I have to say, mine is way smaller than this, but it does seem to be quite easy. And it just has these amazing patterns on the leaves, which look a bit like...
When you look up close, it's like there's millions of little rectangles.
Yeah, it's like almost like a barcode or something on the leaves. And it does seem to be relatively simple to look after relative to the family's legendary trickiness in wintertime as well.
It does seem to be a tough one. And again, I just quite like that combination of there's like the dark green and then the lighter green and then against the teal background on the wall there. It's sort of quite a good combination.
Is this a particular like farrow and ball potato harvest or something? They always have funny names, don't they?
I think it's Vardo.
Okay,
if I can remember, whatever that means. But it's a good colour because it sort of changes depending on the light. Under artificial light it's much greener. And next to the window here, it's a bit more of a bluey colour. I have this Calathea next to... so that's musaica, sort of sounds a little bit like mosaic. And this is Vriesia hieroglyphica, which I think sort of links in with the sort of patterning on the on the leaves, sort of like hieroglyphics.
It's an amazing leaf pattern.
I like to go with a bit of a patterned leaf sometimes.
Yeah, no, that's really beautiful. And especially against the plain but complex leaf of the Howea. I think that's a really nice effect.
Yeah, and the nice deep green.
Did you buy this as a mature plant? Have you had it for many years, this Howea?
No, I bought this a few months ago, but this was an eBay purchase. An eBay purchase where I just had to collect it from about 5 minutes away is ideal. And also, it had been grown for a number of years, so I knew that I was getting a plant that was fully acclimatized to indoor conditions. So the palms that they bring over from Holland, they're always sort of really, really straggly and sort of stretched out.
That tender growth that's ready to be kind of exposed to dry air and then to get really miserable.
I know this one's a tough one, and it's got this nice, like the leaves are so dark green, but then the new leaf is sort of this more of a apple green or mid-green, it's just coming through.
So would you recommend that as a way of buying plants, like keeping an eye out on things like Craigslist and eBay for mature plants that are being possibly a little bit neglected and somebody wants rid?
Yeah. Well, they're not always neglected. Sometimes they just outgrow their space. This was growing in someone's quite small front room and it was taking about half the room up. So I think I was sort of doing them a favour, you know, in their eyes.
And can I ask what you paid for it?
It was £30.
That's pretty good. I don't know what you paid for that, like from a nursery, but...
Oh, from a nursery, you'd get a plant about, you know, a foot or two tall.
Yeah. Well, that was a good buy then. I guess as long as you can check in over and make sure you're not bringing in major pest problems.
I do get a few pests here, so it's sort of... washing plants down. I sometimes take plants into the shower and give them a shower to just sort of wash any pests off. But it's just keeping an eye on things.
Well, that was a good buy by the look of it. You've got to keep your eyes peeled on these local auction sites and things for good plants. Mostly where I live, it tends to be people selling like very dead looking. I mean, I have been looking on Facebook for things in case anything interesting has come up, and it mainly seems to be people selling either their
grandmother's cactus collection, which is kind of covered in mealybug, or something that's half dead, and you just think, and they want £200 for it. I think that's the trouble with generally people don't have an idea, very much of an idea, of what houseplants are worth or what the so it does tend to be you either get a bargain or it's ridiculously overpriced.
It also varies, just like in the trade. In some garden centres, you'll pay huge amounts for exactly the same plant as in another, you know, smaller nursery or wherever. So it's difficult. And then if you go to places like in London, we've got Columbia Road Flower Market, which you sort of think, oh, it's cheap and it's really busy here. But I've found plants in garden centres and nurseries that are the same price. So it's just sort of, I guess it's just shopping around and depends, you know, if there's a plant that you really want, then you just, it's best to go for it.
It's what the market will tolerate, what you'll tolerate, I guess. Let's talk about this table of, well, it's got two begonias on it. I'm not sure what the other plant is, though, or the other two plants are. Tell me about these ones.
I'm not sure what this little leafy thing is. Ooh. I was given that.
I think it looks like
a peperomia.
I think it looks like what I've got, which is Peperomia bangroana.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. That's what I was sold mine as.
Okay.
And it looks very similar to that with the very, very small round leaves. But that may be... I remember Googling it and coming up with basically no results.
Is that one that they... I've seen it in little hanging baskets.
I don't know.
I think I've seen the
quite
palea
possibly
that has this sort of trailing. Anyway, this is a cycad, and more specifically, it's Macrozemia. Macrozemia is really, really elegant cycad that has leaves that are almost like feathers. They're really, really very fine. They look like sort of just like lots of cycads, like a sort of plastic palm, but this is sort of particularly fine and elegant. And then Begonia Carolinae, I think it is, and Luxurians, which that's sort of made a comeback over the winter months. I think it, because I had it by the window here last summer, it sort of got too hot for it, so I didn't realise that they actually do better during the cooler times of year.
This is my nemesis, this plant. Well, actually, although like yours, mine is doing well now. I really struggle with this plant since I got it as a plug from Dibley's about 18 months ago, 2 years ago. But it's finally coming good. Mine is, I found it really hard to keep it happy at first, but I seem to have found that happy medium. But it is a beautiful begonia. And really, neither of these, if you said, oh, that's a begonia, a lot of people would say,
oh, yeah,
it doesn't really look like a begonia at all.
They look more like Scheffler, or I was a bit worried having this one by the window, the Luxuriants by the window, because it does look a little bit like cannabis. But
yes, that's a good point. you could be mistaken.
I just hope that people are sensible enough not to assume it is. And
well, yeah, one would hope so. Yeah, one would hope so. Yeah. Although I'm sure if you tried to smoke that, probably wouldn't do you any good whatsoever. And you've got quite a few of the classic prayer plant, Maranta. What's the second part of that? My mind's gone blank. The herringbone plant, I think, is the other common name that we would know it by. Now, this plant is driving me crazy. Or more specifically, its sister plant, the one with the white ribs, as opposed to the red ribs, because everybody seems to be... I remember seeing it regularly years ago, and now it seems to be impossible to get hold of. I think they're selling it as lemon lime anyway.
Okay.
If anyone has one of those, contact me. But this is a wonderful plant, and I remember this, my parents having this, and it being such a common plant, and it's really only in the last few years come back. It's such a great plant, though, isn't it?
I just think it's so easy and sort of easy to please as well. And I just think the leaves are quite incredible, like the patterns on there. I mean, it looks artificial, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
I am drawn to lots of plants that just look artificial, which is a bit worrying. The other thing I noticed was some of the purple on the underside, it sort of shimmers a little bit, or there's, I mean, sort of shimmers sort of in an iridescent way, depending on the light. But as you know,
yeah.
I did the,
and of course your...
the installation, which was all iridescent plants or iridescence in nature. The one plant which I don't have in this room, it's the iridescent Selaginella. It's sort of taking a winter rest at the moment. Mm. It sort of died back a little bit, but I heard that they like cool conditions, so I'll bring it into the warmth later in the spring and let it grow back on again. But these Maranta are growing, well, I planted them around the base of my current pride and joy, which is this Strelitzia, which I'm very pleased that you've been able to visit with at least one flower on it. It did have two flowers before this one, and it's just on its last legs. You see the old petals are just starting to go over, but lots of weeks of interest with that. And even if it doesn't have flowers, the leaves are very sculptural and very exotic looking.
I've been noticing this plant being sold a lot in garden centres with a fake, talking about fake plants,
yes,
a fake flower spike stuck into the juvenile plant, which is obviously too young to flower. And I wonder how many people realise whether A, this part of the plant is fake, and B, whether people, I guess people buy them, they must sell, but it's fascinating to see. But the crazy thing about it is you really have to get up close and examine that flower to be sure that it is fake. So I guess I can see the appeal in that you're getting an inverted commas flowering plant.
I think it's very clever marketing.
It
is. I remember buying, being drawn to those cacti with the little straw flowers stuck onto them.
Yes, the helichrysum flowers or whatever they were. Yeah.
When I first got sort of started my interest in plants and gardening, and I bought one of these things, and I was so disappointed when I realised they were fake and glued on. But I think if you're interested in plants and gardening, you sort of gradually sort of learn your way around, you know, marketing and the catalogues that have all the colours sort of really sort of intense and much more intense than in reality. So
You do learn to be wary of these things, but in a way, as I say, in a way, I can kind of see where they're coming from. It is such an unusual and dramatic flower. I read something about I have to look this up again. It was to do with the shape of the flower and the name Bird of Paradise, and it was kind of explaining that it's not the people assume that's supposed to be that the main flower is supposed to be the bird's head, but
It
was saying, well, no, it's the bird flying. It represents the whole bird flying. Does
little,
that?
Yeah, I saw a little cartoon about it.
Yeah,
and I realised I had been getting it wrong all this time.
Yeah, same here.
So they say that the sort of bud is like the sort of beak, and then the petals are like the crest. But actually, if you imagine that this is the point of the bud is the tail, and this is sort of the beak, the stem is the beak pointing down towards the plant, and then the petals are the wings. It's sort of like a hummingbird.
Yes,
sort of shape,
yeah, it makes sense once you visualise it. It makes perfect sense.
You know, I saw when I was in Madeira recently, I saw millions of these Strelitzias, you know, on every roundabout in all the gardens. I didn't realise until a few weeks ago that that's actually why it's called the Bird of Paradise.
Yeah, no, that's same here, here. It's amazing how suddenly your vision of something just completely changes.
Yes.
And we have to talk about Hoya linearis, which you've got hanging up here.
Yes.
I wish mine was that long.
Yes.
I keep taking too many cuttings of mine. That's part of the problem. But that's looking lovely and healthy.
Yeah.
I had my Hoyer expert on the other week, and he did say, "Oh, if you're growing linearis, that means you've got a green thumb. You're good at growing stuff because it's not that easy." So, yes. But as I say, mine's just small because I keep giving away cuttings and never letting it get too long.
I just think it's probably the most sort of graceful, elegant trailing indoor plant that there is. I can't really think of another one that's as nice as this. So not this particular one, just the species is such a good one.
If that hasn't made you want to go out and buy a giant Kentia palm on eBay, I don't know what will. We'll be back with Rob shortly, but first we've got question of the week, which comes from Stacey, who appropriately enough wants to know about their bird of paradise. Stacey writes, "I bought a 3.5 to 4 foot bird of paradise in a 10 inch pot from a local hardware store. The one pot held 2 large fans and 1 smaller one. Is it too crowded? Should I split them?" Well, this is a bit of a perennial problem with buying houseplants and the decision you have to make when you come to get them home and decide exactly what's best for them. It's often the case too with things like palms and sometimes also things like ferns. Oftentimes nurseries will plant more than one plant into a pot, so you've got several juvenile plants all packed together in one container to give a fuller and more mature look without actually having to spend the money on mature plants, which obviously take longer to get to a bigger size on their own. Really, there's 2 aspects to this, Stacey. One is, are the plants cramped together and fighting for space, which is a really good reason to think about separating them out. The best way to tell is really just to take the plant out of the pot and have a look at the roots. Are the roots crammed around the side of the pot, or is there plenty of space? If they're not crammed in there and they look pretty happy, I would say that you're fine to keep those plants grouped together in that container. Unless, of course, for aesthetic reasons you want to separate them out. Because you're after the drama of a single specimen plant. These plants grow from rhizomes under the surface, and if you want to take a mature plant and divide up the rhizomes, you can make more that way. But that's not what we're talking about here, because this is several young plants in the same pot by the sound of it. So they should be fairly easy to separate out just by taking the plant out of its pot, laying it out on a tarp or in an old washing up bowl, and carefully teasing apart the root systems of the different plants and repotting separately. Given what we've been talking about with Rob Stakovitz today, I would be tempted to maybe leave them in a clump for the moment. If they're looking happy that way, there's always the option to separate them out as they grow bigger, because of course, grow bigger they will. They'll reach between 3 and 5 foot tall in the house once they reach maturity. It's also worth noting that the advice is generally that these plants will bloom better if they're a little bit pot bound. So if you want to maximise the blooms in the minimum time, then maybe it is worth keeping those 3 plants together. I don't know. It's a really personal choice thing, Stacey, but I hope that's helped. And do let me know what you decide and how your Strelitzia is doing. Oh, and just to talk about what to plant one of these in. Well, personally, I would put this in some John Innes number 3 with a few extra handfuls of perlite or pumice or something similar to that to aid the drainage. If you've got a question for On The Ledge podcast, drop me a line. It's ontheledgepodcast@gmail.com. And now back to my chat with Rob. We sat on Rob's very comfortable and stylish sofas to have a chat about the future of the houseplant industry and us as growers. The worry is that we're in a faddish time when houseplants are in fashion and that this is all going to come crashing down.
Yes, and it's a big worry of mine. Well, I don't stay awake at night, but I'm concerned that now that people have gone into loving houseplants and it's sort of all through social media, how do we keep that going? And I think lots of people will sort of copy what they see on Instagram and sort of recycle the same ideas and the same
you know, the same setups that they photograph their plants in. And so what we end up seeing is loads of houseplants, but they all look the same. I mean, I said earlier that I like to grow sort of quite common species just because they're easy to grow. But when you start looking at those plants and using them in different combinations and in I think planting in groups is always effective, or planting similarly coloured plants together also works well. But I think for anyone that's grown houseplants for a number of years, really it's important that they then grow. I think experiment a bit more with how they grow their plants and what they do with their plants, because the beginners aren't going to be able to do that. You know, anyone can buy a plant and put it in a nice pot, but I think people that are experienced with houseplants need to start trying to push the boundaries a bit more and showing sort of the general public what can be done. I mean, I've just done a few simple things here, but you know, I'm sort of experimenting myself and trying to push some boundaries where possible. But for people that have the right conditions, or the space as well, is a big issue. I'd like to see more exciting sort of setups available. And I mean, I've spoken to James about this as well, because he's created these sort of little sort of miniature green walls that come up out of his aquascapes, and he's created these little habitats and recreations of habitats, but really the possibilities are endless, and I just want to see more new things and new ideas rather than the same, you know, plant in a pot type thing on social media.
How do we drive that? Is that the responsibility of gardeners and growers to push for more interesting stuff, or is it down to the suppliers to be more adventurous? How do we make that happen?
I think it's not just down to the suppliers. I think it's down to the individuals to really get quite creative with things. So, I mean, I put these air plants onto this branch, but really you can do so much more than that. That's sort of, it's sort of been done before. Like I've seen on Pinterest, I think, in a sort of mild climate somewhere, they've strung up loads of air plants and sort of created like a curtain using sort of clump forming tillandsias. But I think it's using the plants that we've got in new creative ways, and maybe trying to go for a slightly bigger scale on things rather than sort of a pot in the corner of the room. I think it would be nice to have these, you know, planted displays with and you can do it anywhere now with grow lights, which are, you know, LED and cheap to run. So I think it's just down to the individual, really. If we can showcase new ways of doing things, then maybe that will keep this houseplant trend going.
Well, let's hope so. I think you're right that there's endless possibilities, and it's just a question of being that little bit more adventurous, which is what is really on display in your home here today. And you're right about the scale. in that, I guess, I mean, it's, you're slightly spoilt in that you've got lovely high ceilings, and this is quite a large room. But then again, you don't need to have this many pots. You could just have one large pot.
Well, like if you look at some of James's terrariums and aquascapes, they're all on quite a small scale. So you can take ideas and scale them down or scale them up depending on your situation. But I think we sort of have to look at the 70s was a time when houseplants were really fashionable. And why, I mean, we sort of know why they've come back again now and gained popularity, but we have to look at the technology. I mentioned lighting, but the technology available to us now, the plants that are available to us now, and use them in sort of more exciting ways. I think that there are sort of unlimited options available, and that's what I'd like to see on social media, more of that.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting observation. I'm kind of sick of seeing the same set of pots and the same kind of white room with a with a fiddly fig in the corner in a basket. I've said this before on the show. And yeah, I guess that's the thing about Instagram, is that it's very easy to see something and just think that's how it has to be. You can get that image just stuck in your mind. And yet there is some innovation. I'll tell you one thing I saw. There's a lady somewhere in Scandinavia on Instagram who has this amazing home, and she has a lot of plants. And one of the things she did that I loved, and I've seen a couple now, is where she's taken an old 50s TV set, taken out all the inside, and got grow lights inside it, and has cacti and succulents growing inside. And I think it's so fun and such... a clever way of kind of recycling and doing something different.
Absolutely. That kind of thing is... I'm all for these sort of quirky elements. I mean, I think it's good to have the quirky elements, but I think it's good to also... I guess this is the garden designer hat.
Of course.
It's nice to have like the sense of style with it as well.
True.
I guess the way she did it must have been quite stylish for you to appreciate it.
I guess I do have a little bit of a thing for the whimsical though, so probably.
I mean, I do as well. You saw my toucan up there on the shelf.
I love the toucan. The toucan is awesome. I guess what I want to try to avoid, and there's nothing wrong with this, but when you go into a big hotel chain and you see like a foyer display of houseplants, I kind of want to avoid my displays looking like that. I mean, I guess perhaps I should be aspiring to that because they're usually nice and healthy and lovely and lush, but it's just that kind of slightly dead look, or dead's not the right word because obviously the plants aren't dead, but you know what I mean? Sometimes it feels a bit kind of too corporate, and... that's what I kind of want to avoid.
Well, I think probably what we should sort of really be aiming for is sort of a cross section of different styles, rather than and I think it's Instagram's fault is that we're seeing the same ideas just being done over and over again. As people take the same ideas and just sort of copy them. I think people should just get really creative and think outside the box. I mean, I think a couple of the pots here would look quite good in a hotel foyer, but then other pots are, you know, quite sort of, you know, you would only find them in a house like mine.
Indeed, I've been fascinated by the revival in the old, I think it's called lava pots, those German pots that you'd like back when I was a kid, like two a penny, pick them up at a jumble sale. And I saw them the other day, something popped up on Facebook for some, you know, vintage products outlet. And I'm thinking, blimey, 50 quid for that pot that, you know, in the 70s would have was just, and all of these things are coming back in and kind of being.
on that bottom shelf there.
Yeah,
is that one?
Sort of, yes, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Suddenly being, you know, a cachet being attached to things that in the past, I guess I'm old enough that I can remember the 70s just about.
I didn't believe you.
I'm not embarrassed. I was born in 74, so I was young in the 70s. But lots of things. Obviously, I mean, fashion moves slowly.
Yes,
there are some things I do wish that I still had from my parents' house. You know, there's lots of things that now I would desire and would be very desirable, copper pans and things like that. But and in fact, looking at your conch shells is making me very nostalgic. Are they conch shells?
Yes.
Making me very nostalgic for my nanny's house, because she had one in her spare room, and I remember holding it up to my ear and listening to, in inverted commas, the sea. In fact, that's a lovely... It has got a phalaenopsis on the top there, and it's got a Wardian case-type terrarium on there. I love that bookshelf.
Yeah. Well, I think...
Tell me about that.
The shelves.
Yeah, or the whole thing. The whole...
Yeah, the whole thing. That was an eBay purchase.
I need to spend more time on eBay you. You obviously
I don't buy huge amounts, but... A few of my favourite sort of things I've bought on eBay. And I think it just ties in kind of with the whole hipster thing, because the hipsters sort of bring back sort of all the retro items and that sort of thing. And that's sort of the style in the room, is sort of a bit of retro and a bit of quirky stuff. Which sort of appeals to me. But I think it's a bit like the I didn't say with the lamp, I drilled a hole in the base of the 70s bottle garden, but that's like a 70s sort of throwback, but I've sort of modernised it, and I think that's it. We need to take lots of ideas from the past and bring them up to date, and then maybe even like go like a bit more futuristic with things, like I guess with the grow lights and that sort of thing. That's like modern technology, and technology that's going to be used sort of way into the future. I like all the sort of retro stuff. I've not found the right TV to hollow out and plant up yet, but it could happen.
If you'd like to hear more from Rob, then you're in luck if you happen to be one of my Ledge Ends, because there's an extra Leaf episode dropping now on my Patreon feed, where you can hear about Rob's aquascaping and also a couple of the other plants in his living room. And do check out the show notes at janeperrone.com for some gorgeous images of Rob's plants. That's all for this week's show. I'll be back next week with more houseplant loveliness. Goodbye. The music you heard in this week's episode was Roll Jordan Roll by the Joy Drops, An Instrument the Boy Called Happy Day Gakana by Samuel Corwin, and Plantation by Jason Shaw. All licensed under Creative Commons. See janeperrone.com for details.